You're listening to Forward Ever, Leading in Challenging Times, presented by Worth Wealth Management, a weekly discussion with leaders around the Midwest about how they adapt and persevere in uncertain times. Now, here's your host, Gary Shorman.
Hi, I'm Gary Shorman, and this is Forward Ever, Leading in Challenging Times, with a special guest and great friend, Steve Ducey, the longtime host of Fox and Friends. Steve, good to have you with us.
Hello, Gary. Good to be here. Thank you.
You know, it's great to go back because you started real early on with Fox and Friends and have built a great career with that.
Yeah,
Emmy Awards and all of that stuff.
Hold on a second. I got started in television with you. It was in the library at Clay Center Community High School. This would have been about 1973, I think, something like that. And our school back then in the 70s did not have a TV program. So you and I went to the assistant principal. I want to say his name was Mr. Lane.
There's Mr. Lane and Mr. Roth.
That's right, Mr. Roth. And we talked him into letting us use a little room adjacent to the library, and we built a TV studio.
We had our own studio with paneling. It was that wood grain paneling, and I don't know who wrote the letters. One of us wrote the letters, and we cut them out and put them up on the back wall.
It did. It said, I want to say it said Channel 6 News or something like that. And so we did that for a while, and then we got so... We had such big heads. We thought, okay, we're television people now. We went to the local Cablevision and we talked the Cablevision into, and back then TV was much simpler. There was a certain channel, I believe it was Channel 6.
Yes.
Play Center on Cablevision that you would tune to if you wanted to know the weather. And it's not like it would have, words on the screen. They just had a thermometer and they had a clock and they had a camera on a little train that went back and forth between like the camera that showed the clock and the temperature and the wind speed, I think, and the barometric pressure. And it would just go back and forth. And you and I talked Cablevision into 1 hour a week. Let's unplug that and we'll plug in our show. And we did. And so we would take our library product of the news, the local news, and we would plug it in and the people of Clay Center would watch it. And I was going through some stuff the other day, Gary, and you'll love this. I found a note from somebody who said, hey, listen, I just wanted you to know, I really appreciated your TV special on the tornado, because that was one of the programs we produced as like field reporters about the tornado that went through Clay Center, I believe our junior or senior year. And we made a TV special, did that for Cablevision, and the rest is history.
We had fun. And you know what? You talk about local and how important it is for that local connection. There was no radio station, no TV station in Clay Center at the time. So right. We were literally Clay Center and friends. Yep. And sharing the stories, but that local connection has paid off for me long-term. And I know it's paid off for you of telling that story and how you connect with local people, but what great memories and the feedback of that community. Still, I still get some as well with the comments of people that watch that on cable channel 6.
That's right. People still go, what the hell were you guys thinking? What were you doing screwing with my time and temperature?
And we did it with such passion that I think most people forgave us a little bit. And that was in high school. So you went on and went through KU. I went the radio route, and it's just fun to connect. And one of the real bases of this program started with Senator Moran, and we were on an audio call, one of those Zoom audio / video calls. But it was such a challenge trying to figure out what to do when the pandemic was hitting. And how to do that. And it's like, well, let's do a program about people who are leading through the challenging times that we've had. And one of the things that I know you have had, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, about what you did when the pandemic actually hit, how you had to change your lifestyle. But you, during this time, have written a cool cookbook that includes some stories from back in Clay Center. How did you get a cookbook going during a pandemic? That's a unique story right there.
Well, thank you very much. You know, the whole idea, my wife, Kathy, and I wrote our first cookbook about 3 years ago. And the idea was there are certain foods that when you see or you think about just kind of trigger a happy memory in your the nostalgia department of your brain. And it's like we might be, you know, years removed from our childhood, but every time my wife, Kathy, makes my mom's pot roast and I walk in the house and I smell the cream of mushroom soup and the Lipton onion soup, it just, you know what? It just takes me back to growing up on that dirt road in Clay County, Kansas. And there, everybody's got those foods that are triggers to happy times. So we wrote it like 3 years ago. Then they said, you know what, can you write another one? But what was different about this time, and it came out in at the very end of September of 2020, when the pandemic was raging. And it just struck a chord because the name of the book was Happy in a Hurry. And, you know, we'd been through 6 months of pandemic already, and who didn't want to be happy in a hurry? And we're all stuck at home and we've all run out of things to cook. So it's like this book was, you know, it was the right idea at the right time. It became the number one New York Times bestseller. It was the number one book on Amazon for a couple of weeks. People embraced the idea and they loved the same idea of, you know, I want to read the stories about why that's a happy food. And you know, everybody in my family, I told stories about what their happy foods are. People I work with at Fox, I tell a story about a foreign exchange student who lived at your house.
That's correct.
When we were in high school, and the way he made, I remember to this day, you invited me over, you and your mom.
Antonio.
And invited me and Bill Chestnut, another one of our posse from back then. And your foreign exchange student, Antonio Cenci?
Yes, that's right.
He said, I'm going to make you dinner. And he made this pasta. I knew it was going to be spaghetti. And I thought, oh, big deal. I've had spaghetti a million times. But so he's making the spaghetti. And I'm thinking, where is the red sauce? Because I'm used to stuff out of a can, because that's the way my mom would make it. But he took a pound of bacon and he made like a carbonara, which was a complete game changer. And to this day, the way he made that, I never forgot it. And so when we were putting together these happy recipes, I was thinking, you know, Antonio started with this and it was delicious. And so we added arugula, which is like a lettuce, and some tomatoes. And so we came up with BLT pasta. It's bacon, lettuce, and tomato pasta. And I would say that it is in my top five absolute favorite recipes in this cookbook.
And I agree. Yeah, I agree, Steve. We cooked it the other night, and it's a wonderful recipe, but it's sort of indicative of the stories you tell of the different people that you know, and the stories make the recipe.
Well, because everybody, you know, you can be a high and mighty person at the upper strata of the government, or you could be in show business, or you could just be a guy who works down at the fix-it shop. But we all have shared common backgrounds where we all grew up in a house with if we're lucky, with parents who loved us and who had rituals and did things. And so there's a certain commonality about where we all come from. And, you know, that's a great thread that runs through America. We've had so many shared experiences, and, you know, that's just one of the things that went into thinking about how to come up with a second book. And so anyway, it did really well. And by the way, thank you very much for the help with the recipe.
Well, when you look at that, you look at that book but it does tie into the pandemic in that way of people were trying to connect, but they couldn't connect outside. So families were together, people were together. And do you have a favorite recipe other than this, the BLT spaghetti? Do you have any other favorite recipes out of that book? So when somebody goes and buys it, they can say, I'm going to go to Steve's favorite recipe and cook that one first.
Well, I have a lot of favorites, but something that you and I had growing up, you know, whenever there would be a like a box social or a community event at the industry community center, which would be the one room schoolhouse that I went to for a while, there was a lady who always brought this. It was like a dip. And, you know, when folks would park their tractors, because we come from a farming community, and you know, put on your best overalls and go in to see everybody. A lot of people always made the same stuff. I remember, I think my mom always made a chocolate sheet cake. And a lot of people made things over and over. And then there was one woman, and I do not remember her name, but she would always make this dip that had like almonds and cream cheese and sour cream. And it was fantastic. And so it's called the Church Lady Ranch Dip. And it is the best dip. In fact, for like a Super Bowl weekend or something like that, that would be fantastic. So, you know, everything triggers something in me. But I think my absolute favorite, and the idea is happy in a hurry, so it's got to be stuff that you can make relatively quickly, is from my friend Tony, who is actually my son Peter's godfather. His wife, they grew up in Michigan, and when she got married to him, one of the presents that her mother gave to her was a little index card box full of the recipes that she grew up on. And, you know, that's right up my Happy in a Hurry, Happy Cookbook series alley. And she shared this recipe for a Ritz cracker crust peanut butter pie. And it's so simple. Instead of a flour crust, a regular flour and butter crust, you take 50 Ritz crackers, you pulverize them, you put a cup of butter in the middle, and then you make a crust on the bottom of a greased pie pan. And then you put together essentially Cool Whip and peanut butter, and you would never know it's that simple. And I think it is the best of the recipes in the cookbook. I think that
fast and good, it sounds like.
It's fast, and I think that and Marcus Luttrell, the lone survivor, who Marky Mark played him in the movie, his mother's prime rib, I think are the two most popular recipes in the cookbook.
Well, if somebody wants to go, they can go to Amazon and get this cookbook. There's places absolutely they can go and get this cookbook, but I'd recommend doing that, because if you're from our listening area here, these are all recipes. When you say church lady something, it's usually a really good recipe, because right, you only took your best recipes to the church potluck dinner.
That's
and
right.
So they're great recipes.
Got to show off a little bit. And so you take something with cream cheese. And I'm just saying, that's what I remember. Or sour cream. Oh, my goodness.
Well, Steve, I want to come back and talk about, you know, the program talks about leadership in challenging times, and you've certainly been delivering the news, delivering the information over those challenging times. And I want to take a break real quick. I'll come back. And I had a chance to go by your farmhouse out by industry and drove that road between your place and my place. And I want to expand on how that happened, your road to where you are, but specifically the road that happened for you when the pandemic hit last year. So bear with me just a second. We're going to take a break and be right back. Our guest is Steve Ducey, longtime host of Fox and Friends and a personal friend of mine as well. Back after this.
It's now on our watch. America's been tested before, many times. We salute those that are on the front line, in our own backyard and well beyond, and those that lead us to a better tomorrow. Our roots run deep, and so do our relationships. Let's move forward together. Live with confidence. Worth Wealth Management. There is a tomorrow that shines upon a better day. We'll move forward together.
Back with Forward Ever, leading in challenging times. Our guest is Steve Ducey, host of Fox and Friends and multiple Emmy Award-winning TV journalist and personality. So, Steve, your road last year, the pandemic hit. Those of us in more rural parts of the world, Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, those areas, we had a certain, ability to go home pretty quick, be in a rural area. What was it like for you in New York City when the news first hit that we were just shutting the world down?
Well, we couldn't really believe it because while the stories were trickling out initially from China and then from Italy, and it's like, what is going on over there? And the United States was not doing any testing, so we had no idea whether or not it was here. I remember what I remember about January of 2020 is that we had been at the Super Bowl in Miami for half a week, and we didn't know it, but as it turns out, that was actually a super spreader event. They've been able to contact trace. And when I came home, I had kind of a fever for a while. And then when the news broke, I was thinking, hey, did I already have this thing? Because if I did, that would be great, because then I wouldn't have to worry about it. I have since had the antibody test and I did not have it. But in the beginning, it was like, okay, we've got to rethink everything. And at that point, because China was not forthcoming with what they knew, we didn't know what it was. I mean, we stopped doing everything. I started doing the show from my living room, did it from my living room for 100 days. And because to be in New York City with, I think, 1,000 people work in my building, that would be a super spreader event. And so they just shut everything down. And maybe I don't know what the official number is, but maybe 3, 4, or 5% of the workforce was actually in the building. When I go into work now, we're still so cut back because you cannot have a lot of people in one room. Because what we didn't know then, but we know now, is the way you get it is you breathe the air from somebody who is infected. And so the whole idea is you just stay away from that air. We didn't know that though, because I remember I would go to the grocery store and in the beginning, there were not a lot of people wearing masks, and I would go to the grocery store and then bring the groceries home. And then I would wash all the groceries, which was crazy. But we thought, if you touch it, you're gonna get it. And people had that kind of paranoia. We now know you don't have to do that. And the always hand washing with Purell and stuff like that, we now know that was excessive as well.
Well, Steve, most people don't know your schedule, but during, I'll say, regular time, you leave at 3 a.m. You have you're an early riser. You have to be. Yep. You've done that year after year. What happened during that? Obviously, you were at home. You had to get the technology there to be able to do your hosting. Yep. You had to have the cameras, all that stuff. How did that all transpire to actually make it look professional, like it really does? You have an amazing studio there with lights, cameras, 1,000 people running around.
How did
you make that happen from home?
Well, kind of dumb luck, because one of our producers, a guy by the name of AJ Hall, who, we used to do these diner segments all the time where we would go to a diner and ask people what they think about what's going on in the world. And we had this little 4K camera that has this device called a live view. And the live view, back in the olden days, Gary, you remember if you wanted to do a live report from someplace, you needed like a satellite truck or a microwave truck to get the signal from your location back to the station, or bounce it off a satellite and it winds up at the network. This live view technology is such that the way it's been explained to me is it's essentially, it's a backpack with 6 different cell phone cards in it. And so it has the power of 6 cell phones, and it's able to transmit a broadcast quality 4K image essentially through the cell phone, over Verizon or whatever your Wi-Fi is. And so it's been fantastic. So AJ, who lives about a half an hour away from me, because we could not go into New York City, he brought this little camera to my house. He had a tripod. We bought two stand lights from Amazon for $100. He had a microphone. I've got a room with a bunch of books that became the background. And that was the studio. I think it cost Fox $150 to turn my house into a TV studio. It you know, once you've got the technology with this live view thing, it was actually very easy.
That reminds me, Steve, of our studio that you talked about earlier with the paneling in back and the cutout letters.
Just it's not
you advance your technology.
It's not that much different. I mean, I actually took a desk lamp, a gooseneck desk lamp, and I put it on something high, on the top shelf of my bookcase, and I just shined it on the back of my light and that of the back of my head. And that was my backlight, because you have to have light in the front and light in the back. So we had the two Amazon lights, and then we had my desk light as the backlight. And just to make sure it didn't shine on the camera, I used a little aluminum foil and just focused it right there on the top of my head. And, you know, it's how people, you know, it's like you watch those NASA movies and they're going to outer space or they're on the moon and they have a problem. What do they do when things go wrong? They get out the duct tape.
Duct tape.
You're right.
Well, Steve, exactly. You know, we're living here in communities, whether it be Hayes, Salina, Clay Centers, North Platte, et cetera. What's it like in the heart of New York City when you're down there? What does it feel like compared to what it used to feel like?
It feels, you know, when I go into work, it's in the 4 o'clock hour. And it kind of feels the same because nobody was ever on the streets when I was going into work. In the very beginning, after we got the okay to go back to work, when I would drive in, I would be the only car on the road. For the 25 miles to get into New York City. I mean, the only car there, and there were no cars parked in New York City. I don't know where everybody went, but they were not there. And all the skyscrapers were, for the most part, seemed to be abandoned. It was the time of the unrest in the summer. And so a lot of the very familiar things that were, and our offices are in the Rockefeller Center area, a lot of the storefronts and the ground floors completely encased in plywood to keep people from breaking the windows or because windows had gotten broken. So it was a ghost town for, I would say, 2 months. And then after Labor Day, the historic time when kids go back to school, there was no school to go back to. But it's just like one of those things. Okay, we went through spring, we went through summer. They say it's getting better. And so I think it became kind of a, okay, we can do more stuff now. So more people started going into work. And so now, for instance, today when I drove in, I would say between my house and the George Washington Bridge, I would say I probably saw a lot more than I saw 6 months ago, but I would still say it's only a quarter of the number of people who were going into work 1 year ago.
Well, Steve, one of the things I want to, we talk about on the show is leadership. What have you seen over this same time period that you're talking about in leadership? What have you learned? What have you seen from people? Are there some out there saying, boy, the leadership here, these are the things that really helped us get through the pandemic, at least to the point where we are?
That is a great question. And I think because so little was known in the beginning, you know, and when, you know, and we heard, okay, you don't need to wear a mask. And then they said, okay, you need to wear a mask. And so I think people were confused. I think there was so, you know, and people have blamed the leaders for different things, you know, depending on whether it's the state or local or federal level. But for me, the real leaders have been in the communities. I looked at the people in my town who organized things for people who needed help and And, you know, they didn't know what to do. They needed some sort of help with groceries and stuff like that. And, or with the, you know, the testing, which was sparse, became busier through the months. And now the vaccinations, which are taking off in earnest, you know, and I looked at the people in each and every family who looked at the problems, and you really had a kind of a choice. It's like, okay, do I follow the science, or do I just have a feeling that I'm going to be safe? And, you know, you can have a feeling you're going to be safe, but this is something that nobody could see. And so it's like, you really have to follow the science. And so, you know, the people who encourage people to just be careful, I think those were the ones who were the real leaders and have helped get us to where we are today. And, you know, for that, you know, we've got to be grateful.
You know, we grew up in places with good neighbors. And yeah. I think we saw that in parts of the world, whether it be where you live, we live neighbors stepping up to help. And that's probably one of the lessons learned. And we shouldn't forget when we go back that there's still that neighbor that may need help down the road. Well, interesting look at that, Steve.
Well, that is such a good point, because when we were locked down, the only people I would see, because I wasn't going into work, the only people I would see would be my neighbors. Because at that point, and I live in a suburb about 25 miles from downtown New York, everybody was at home. Nobody was working. And the only thing we had to do was go for a walk. So people were doing two, three, four a day walks. And we would see people. But, you know, at that point, it's kind of like, oh, I think I got too close to that neighbor. They were within like 10 feet. Everybody was freaked out. It's like, oh, if I get it, it's because I was way too close to the lady around the corner or something like that. Because she came over to ask me a question about something. And every day I would make one drive about a mile and a half to see my friend Tony. And we would go on a 5-mile walk and, you know, socially distanced. And that was the community. Aside from the people in the house, that was the community. And ultimately, this has ended very badly for our street. One of our neighbors, within the last month or so, contracted COVID and died within a week. And he had diabetes, and it was just a terrible, terrible story. But it reminded us all that it feels like we're over this, but we're not over this. There is still an unknown enemy out there, and we just all have to be so careful.
We have to be careful and do the right things, because we will get back to a point. I heard it the other day, and I thought this, we want to get back to the point where we can hug the people we love, and we'd be able to visit and do that. And Steve, such a good story of that neighbor next door, and how we still have to be diligent.
Yeah.
Follow what we need to do, follow the science, get the vaccine, do those things that are important, so that we can get back to hugging the people that we love.
No, I know. And, you know, he died so suddenly. The last time I talked to him, he had come over about three days before the ambulance took him to the hospital. He had come over to my house, and he had asked if he could borrow my ladder, because I've got a 32-foot orange ladder, one of those construction ladders.
I'd like to borrow that too, Steve.
It's a great ladder. but then he died, and his widow is there, and it's still propped up against the house. And so I see it every day.
Oh gosh.
And I just think about that guy, and I just can't wait till this is over.
I agree. Steve, thanks so much for taking time out of your, I know it's a hectic schedule, to visit with us, talk to us back here in the Midwest about what you do. And I do hope people take a look in that time, that cooking together as a family is such a neat thing. You've done it with Kathy and your kids over the years, and continue to do that. So thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. I mean, what else do we have to do? You know, we're going to be in the house. We might as well make something delicious. Besides, in telling that story, I have a craving for the Church Lady Ranch dip now.
So do I. Steve, thanks so much for joining us. Our guest today on Forward Ever, Leading in Challenging Times, has been Steve Ducey, longtime host of Fox and Friends. Steve, thanks. Our program is brought to you by Worth Wealth Management.
Thanks for listening to Forward Ever, sponsored by Worth Wealth Management. If you have a great suggestion for a future guest for the program, you can email Gary at gary.shorman@eagleradio.net. That's gary.shorman@eagleradio.net. Forward Ever is a production of Eagle Communications.
Challenging times are when experience matters. We allow our clients to live with confidence. Long-term trusted relationships. Worth Wealth Management. Enhancing lives and strengthening families.